Good evening, Browns fans, and welcome to the Gang of Three. My name is Barry McBride. I am the publisher of the Orange and Brown Report. And with me, as always, well, not always, but most of the time, Mr. Pete Smith and Mr. Lane Atkins. How you doing, guys?
Blended.
That is good to hear. That is good to hear. Pete, I couldn't hear you when you said okay. Are you okay? I am not hearing you, my friend. Check your microphone level and all that sort of stuff. But in the meantime, while he figures out his microphone, what we are going to do is we are going to talk Cleveland Browns over the course of the next hour. I mean, what else are we going to talk about? There's a bit going on, not a ton going on. And because there's not a ton of plot lines to talk about today, we invite your comments and questions to help direct us along the way and give us some perspective. Lane, welcome back, sir. It's good to have you after your Verizon-related chaos last week. How are you doing?
Ready to ditch them, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, they gave you all kinds of problems last week, man. I'm glad that you're back this week. Pete, are you there yet?
As I know.
All right. I hear you. So we're good. So let's get into it, gang. We've got this week the rookie minicamp coming up May 8th through the 10th. A couple of those days are going to be open to the media. The OBR will be there. Pete, what do you look to get out of rookie minicamp? What value does rookie minicamp add from the perspective of Browns fans?
Well, whether the team wants to admit it or not, from the front office to coaches to players, they want to see the rookies get out there and actually look like the guys they were taking, because there have been incidents. I will cite a former Heisman Trophy winner that was picked by the now Washington Commanders, who came off the field after being selected fourth overall, and the veterans turned to reporters and said, "This dude can't play." So that is a real thing, figuring out that these guys are actually real football players and that look every bit who you hope they're going to be. Desmond Howard, they were right. He couldn't play. I mean, ultimately, he was a kick return for the Green Bay Packers in the Super Bowl, but like, there is that sort of passing that looks test, passing the does this guy look like he belongs to be here type thing. And so all the coaches and front office guys will sort of have a little bit of a sigh of relief when those guys pass that test.
Lane, we didn't get your perspective last week on the new draft class. I hope to make up for some of that today. But who are you most excited to hear about on the field in rookie camp? Who are you most intrigued with out of that rookie class?
Well, I can sit here and look at the first five selections and say that each one of them, there is an intrigue to and what they can mean to this team right from the onset, in which I fully anticipate that we're going to see a lot of these guys immediately thrust into competitive situations and positions to, you know, compete, not for necessarily to start, not all of them, but for playing time and the ability to get on the field. And that's a big thing with these mini camps and these OTAs, is getting young guys on the field and start absorbing some of what they're going to have thrust at them at the professional level. It's just a different ballgame. So when you look down at it, you know, Spencer Fano, the guy can play left tackle, he can play the right side. He somewhere he's going to play, and he's going to be effective. I have no doubt about that. Casey Concepcion, you know, a guy who they got at 24 that could have went a little earlier and was definitely going to go right in that area that he did. Denzel Boston, that they believe they got a steal with, and most other teams in the NFL believe that he's better than a 39th pick. Same thing with Emmanuel McNeil Warren, a guy who goes, 58th, and he was projected to be 20, 23 picks earlier than that. So, you know, another win. Austin Barber, a guy he doesn't do anything spectacular. He's workmanlike. He does good things. He needs work. Definitely needs work with his hands and feet. But he's a guy that you can see some promise in. And, you know, the player who is going to slide under the radar here is Brailsford, the center from Alabama. He's not going to play at 289 pounds here. They are going to put a little bit of weight on him. But when you go through his tape and you look through every single play with this guy, he's a guy who just grows on you and does his job well. And he plays bigger than what his size is. So it's going to be interesting to see what transpires here, especially since they have needs and openings.
I agree that Brailsford plays bigger than the 289. I was actually pretty surprised at how stout he was, particularly right off the rip when they played Florida State against Daryl Jackson, who's going to play nose. Now, he's not playing any super behemoths, but the reality is that, one, the Browns don't have anybody that can single block Dexter Lawrence, and two, they're not going to ask anybody to single block Dexter Lawrence. So if that's sort of the measuring stick, it's unrealistic. But there are some other things with Parker Brailsford that I was a little surprised by. He can pull. That part didn't surprise me. I wish he was a little bit better in terms of hitting moving targets. But I'm really intrigued to see what he can do, because obviously this is tough. On the one hand, you'd really love to be able to say, hey, we know exactly how we're going to play this. Elgton Jenkins can go to right guard, and we're going to be fine at center. But until they get pads on, until Mason Graham, Malik Collins, and Kalia Davis and these guys get their hands on him, it's just difficult to know.
You know, but you look at him, you look at him on the field, he's got excellent feet. You know, his hips and movement, he does so many things well, and he's strong. He's strong at the point of attack, which I was somewhat surprised by, but just kept looking at him and then seeing how he can get to the next level. It's an interesting pick, and a guy that they sought, which was funny to think that far deep that there was a guy that they were looking at that they were hopeful that they could get their hands on, and he was a guy that they would have moved a little bit for if they had to.
Interesting.
It's interesting to look at that just because that's where a lot of the centers went. And, this may be a class where we see a handful of guys that are fifth-round picks end up being starting centers in the league. Certainly Brailsford has a really good shot based on just his athletic profile and those things, but we'll see ultimately how far he's going to get a shot at some point. It's just a question of timeline.
Well, I think it's going to come down to is what he shows when he gets in the camp. If he can get in there and begin to stand out and not make the egregious mistakes and show that he belongs right away, he's going to be a guy that George Warhop is going to want to grasp onto and get him on the field in a position sooner than later. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens once we get through these early summer months before we get to camp when the physicality kicks up.
And obviously with Whipler still not in there practicing yet, those are more opportunities for a Parker Brailsford to get in there and impress. And if he shows well, it will not be a surprise if the notes from practice are Brailsford's getting a higher amount of reps every practice because they just want to throw as much as they can. And I mean, obviously unpadded stuff only goes so far, but if you're center, it's also being able to line these guys up, get the command up front, be able to put those guys in the right positions, make the right calls. Ethan Posick was certainly a professional tackle, but there were times, and I don't know how much of it was his fault and a certain guy who's no longer here at left tackle, but there were times where you just sat there and you go, something is wrong with the protection call. Something is not being blocked correctly, and it led to some issues. And if Brailsford is somebody who can knock that out, he's got 40 career starts at center. That's going to be important.
You know, it just makes it all the more interesting when you note the 40 career starts. We're talking about an experienced lineman who's played at a high level, who's just you just don't expect the physical strength that he has when you just look at him. But then when you get on the field and you see how he can just grasp on the people and move people and manhandle people. And it's going to be interesting because we found out here very recently that Luke Whipler, he's still behind eight ball a little bit. He's got a little bit more time to go before you're going to really see him doing anything. So this is just every opportunity there is for Brailsford to, grasp on and lock into something here that maybe he is physically ready for, and we're going to see how the mentals play out.
This is reflected in a question from Fumble asking if Barry could possibly pick five starters from this draft, one on defense, four on offense, turning over nearly half the offense this year, with new draft picks. You might have it last year. You have almost complete replenishment of the offense. Pete, do you think that's possible? We've got five starters in this draft?
Could be six, could be more than that with, if you include some guys who are going to play roles at least. Yep. Because Austin Barber could theoretically end up at right tackle. I have major reservations about him playing a guard, given what I saw Ruben Bain do to him. But he could be end up being the right tackle. Obviously, that would be a dream scenario for the Browns if they were able to get him to a point where he's confidently able to do that. He's got the nasty demeanor that they want. He's athletic. He works real hard. He's a prick, which is great for me. I love him. He's the type of guy who you will would absolutely hate if he was on the Pittsburgh Steelers, but you will absolutely love him if he's on the Cleveland Browns. Brailsford, we already talked about. And then the two guys that I'm looking at as role players that I think have a good shot are Talon Green. If he can become good enough to be active, he's a problem. Red zone, short yardage. He just spreads the field out so much in terms of what he's able to do. If he never throws the ball, he's still going to be a problem. And then the seventh round pick, Carson Ryan, is a really good football player. His profile is outstanding in terms of athleticism, and he was productive. He just does a lot of dirty work stuff. And I love the pick as it sort of relates to Harold Fannin, because I think they're going to take some of the dirty work off of Fannin's plate in terms of some of the blocking stuff and some other elements, and they can be played together. But Carson Ryan, just you watch him and he just does stuff. You're like, I love watching this guy play football. His agility and flexibility are incredible, and they show up on tape consistently in terms of how well he makes his quarterback look right.
And it's going to be interesting when you look at the situation. You know, they select Justin Jefferson in the fifth round, and they see him in that Devin Bush type role that he won't have to worry about in that first year, because he's going to play special teams and he's going to get acclimated to the game. That's something that they see here because he covers ground. He can run. He's got some things that he has to work on, but when he gets his hands on you, he's pretty sure tackler. So it's going to be interesting. And another one, Joe Royer, he's an underappreciated guy. Some people think, this guy sucks. Well, no, if you really look at him, he doesn't suck. I think that he's in situations where he hasn't been able to be nearly as productive and utilized as he could have been. Now, when you talk about him and you talk about the seventh round pick, Carson Ryan is he's more athletic. He's smoother. He finds the ability to get into space. His blocking is improved. This is a guy that you got to keep an eye on. I'm curious to watch the tight ends play out here when we get into the summer months in the training camp, because, you know, with all the 13 personnel's played here and in the room that the Browns have at tight end, you're looking for guys who have that athleticism or can be productive and do these kind of things. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, because I think both of them are going to have a real solid opportunity to see the field in 2026.
Royer's frustrating on some parts. The positive for me, he is a good power forward type in terms of being a receiver. He uses his body well to box out defenders and frame the ball. I wouldn't call him like a contested catch guy, but he does know how to use his body to make catches. And he's got a weird build. He's got he's a really tall guy, but he's got really short legs. And it actually benefits him in terms of like body control and running routes and stuff. And he's got a good sense of spacing and those things. He blocks like shit. And he doesn't look all that interested in blocking. And that's going to be the thing for him is right now there's a path, because he may well be the best Y on the team in terms of being a receiver. Right. And there's a role for that. And certainly with what Lane's talking about, the amount of teams that want to use 13 personnel, and there's certainly going to be a place for Royer. But if he doesn't figure out a block, he never does not want to do it. Like, just – he's been soft since Ohio State. He's been in college for 6 years. He still blocks like shit. If he doesn't figure that out real quick, we're going to be talking about how are we upgrading from Joe Royer. And that's okay as a fifth-round pick. Like, if he can provide a role in year one, great. Like, if he can do the things that your legs are looking for. But don't be surprised when all of a sudden we're talking about, well, we got to really upgrade this because this guy can't do this, this, and this. And he's a very bit player. And he's disappointing because he doesn't do a whole lot on special teams. Now, he's going to have to learn that real fast because he's just not going to make the roster if he can't. But, look, I get it. I'm thrilled that Andrew Berry did not get caught up in the, you know, tulip buying frenzy of the tight ends in round two. where a 25-year-old blocking tight end goes in the second round, and you know, you pay astronomical prices for guys that are role players. But it does seem like it bit the Browns in terms of they had to take a guy, so they took Joe Royer. I'm happy they took him in round five as opposed to taking these, you know, these other guys, and it allowed them to get value elsewhere. I'm hoping I'm wrong. I hope Joe Royer crushes it and can come on this show and dunk on me if he wants. There is stuff he does well, but overall, like he and Jefferson both, I can see a path for Jefferson. I have a really tough time with Royer.
It's going to be interesting. We keep talking about when you talk about Royer. You know, they go in and select two tight ends because really they needed to address it and just see what they can come up with. And, you know, if you get swings and misses at this point, you get swings and misses. The only problem is, it's not really a problem. It's actually a good thing to have is that you've selected a couple guys that are capable in the receiving aspect of the game. That can Carson Ryan more so than Royer. Royer's more intermediate. Carson Ryan just has the ability to do some things, especially in a route that's going to make this an interesting competition watching these guys. But as far as the Browns are concerned, they selected a couple tight ends because they want a tight end, you know, definitely opposite of number 44 that has the opportunity to at least help them in the passing game downfield, especially in his first year blocking. It takes time with some of these guys. I mean, David Njoku couldn't block with a ship when he got here.
He at least wanted to learn.
But he wanted to learn. Well, we're going to find out the same thing with this guy. We're going to find out the same thing with Royer, because your NFL career is going to really basically hinge on your ability to at least get your body in front of somebody and slow that path down. They've got some interesting guys here that we're going to get a look at, and you're going to look at early, because that's what the benefit is with having a new coaching staff. It's all new eyes on talent you had, talent you accumulate, and how you're going to utilize the talent. That's what's going to make this summer the most interesting summer that we've seen in a while. Let's not even get into the quarterback BS. It's everything else that's surrounding this team with these young guys to see what kind of position they're going to get put in, what kind of position they're going to put the Browns and their coaching staff in to get them on the field, to give them the opportunity to play. And I'm really curious to see Monken and his staff do that with these guys.
Well, you're 100% right about the notion of the Browns have, since 2016, have drafted tight ends that catch first, make plays in the passing game, and then they figured out the blocking. David Njoku is the prime example, but they did it with Seth DeValve. They did it with Harrison Bryant. They've done this. Now, the difference is they aren't practically PhD-worthy like Joe Royer is. Having said that, the Carson Ryan thing, I think, is going to be fascinating, because I look at him not only as they need depth for Fannin, that role, because they're not going to, like, Harold Fannin's down with an injury and just stop doing it. It just, in what I've seen from what Todd Monken's doing, that role matters and they need another guy to do it. However, one of the things I think Carson Ryan will do is sort of, and this will sound weird, he will operate as a sort of a supplement to, and then a potential replacement for, some of these guys as running back in pass protection. And no, I don't mean that Carson Ryan's going to line up next to the quarterback, though he could. But it's because as a check release guy, Carson Ryan's flexibility is uncanny. There are a lot of running backs who, when the ball's slightly off target, they basically trip over their own feet, have trouble adjusting to it. Carson Ryan's hip flexibility is so good. He makes bad passes look good. He can turn and catch passes behind him. He keeps his feet, and then he gets yards after the catch. Like, I think that's going to be a big element of his value. Yeah, there's a whole lot of these things he can do, but it's going to be check release, little dump offs that make the quarterback look good, and he's just going to eat up yards because he's competitive and he's tough and he does all those things. And yes, he could theoretically get a look at fullback, though I am convinced, and I'm waiting to be proven wrong by Thursday, the one of the undrafted free agents is going to end up being that fullback.
That could very well happen. I wouldn't be surprised if you see something like that. You know, in a nutshell, I believe that on paper, this team had an outstanding draft. They attacked the areas of need. They got quality talent, some of the top talent on the board at each position. You have to have some kind of, I don't know, how would you want to call it, optimism going into the summer here with what they're doing. I'm just really curious. I'm most excited because it's a new staff with different ideas with these guys. I believe that there's going to be dividends to be paid here with what we're going to see going forward.
Yes, they did sign a fullback. He's been in the league for 12 years. I don't think that's what they want to be the answer. I think that is a case of we needed a guy. But the guy I'm keeping an eye on is TJ Harding, nominally out of SMU. But you go back to where he was, how he played at UCLA. He was second on the team in receiving 1 year. Obviously, they're a really bad passing team. But, like, his production as a receiver at running back was really, really good. He's 220 pounds as a running back in college. It would not take him much to get up to a point where he could be a fullback size guy. Guys sort of bounced off of him as a runner anyway. But like his ability to theoretically be a fullback and then be and when I watch him, we'll see if I'm right. He looks like an old school West Coast fullback.
Yep. And he's probably walking around the offseason, you know, with fullback size on him to start with. That's going to be interesting to see what happens, but I couldn't agree more with you.
They brought another kid from Mississippi State. I don't know if that's the same thought process. That may be literally just a running back because they need a running back to practice with. But, yeah, I think Harding's the one where I'm very curious to find out if all of a sudden he's in the backfield because, and they may not keep him on the roster. He may be a practice squad call-up depending on matchups. But, like, he's the type of guy whose production really, really fits well with that type of role.
Mm. Lane, I asked a question of Pete last week, and I will subject you to it. You know, obviously you can look through this draft and say, hey, here's a bargain – you know, that they got, here's a, you know, a pick that gets a grade of A, you know, from all the draft Knicks who are out there, whatever, you know, it looks like a good draft. But is this a draft, in your opinion, where there's sort of an underlying theme, right? Is this a bunch of really good quality pieces parts, or are these parts that were selected with a purpose, you know, sort of a cohesive purpose? So I'm just sort of curious your view on that.
Well, if we listen to everything that Andrew Berry said leading into the draft and during the draft and following the draft, they had target acquisition points and talent that they specifically were looking for. And when you get to that point, they wanted offensive tackle. They hit it right away with it. They didn't waste any time. They knew they needed wide receivers, and they attacked with the best two that were on the board still, and some arguably had both of these guys higher than where they were selected. So it was another targeted move there. They knew that they needed help in the defensive backfield, safety, you know, playing big safety, another one. So what do? They went and got a guy that should everybody expect to go 20-some picks higher. I mean, he has good size, speed, range. The guy can cover. It's interesting picks. It interested me a little bit, and it got, like, when they went to Austin Barber, because we had talked endlessly about them adding offensive linemen leading up to this draft. And we were beating the drum on a guard, and they jump into Austin Barber, who today, when you look at him, he looks better as a tackle than he is a guard or would be a guard. So we're going to have to see what happened. But the underlying theme is that the guy can play, and he took tons of meaningful reps at Florida. It's not like the guy just showed up and played 14 games, and, you know, next thing you know, he's the third-round draft choice in the NFL. So I think everything was targeted, and they were precise with what they were going to do. They knew they needed help at center. What did they do? They drafted a center. They knew they needed help at tight end. They drafted tight ends. The interesting pick is going to be Talen Green. I mean, it just got to the point where he was just so good value, and he could do many things if he doesn't make it as a quarterback, and they're going to give him opportunities. So I think they were very targeted, precise, and they got exactly the type of players that they wanted here.
You know, just to follow up on that, Lane, this is something Pete and I talked about a little bit last week. You know, in terms of Talen Green, do you view him as sort of a developmental lottery ticket, a camp arm, or a gadget guy, you know, for this team in the short term?
Well, you think walking in, it really he fits in that, maybe that all the above category, because you just don't know, and you have to see it, and you have to start working with him to know where he's truly at, not what you see on film, not what you see in an interview, not what you see at a combine. Once you get him into your building and see how quickly he processes, see how he understands, see what he can do, see what he can recognize, those are all key factors that start now. These are the things that these guys, with these coaches, this is where the finger get prints get put all over these guys to find out what they really are. All we know is that Talen Green is an unbelievable athlete with size. He can throw a football, even though sometimes you don't know where it's going. You know, so there's an opportunity there to begin to mold and develop this guy and give him maybe some opportunities. It depends on how good he's going to be when we get towards the end of the training camp. Is he going to be able to make it on this roster? Or is it somebody they try to stash away? Right now, you don't know. This is the very beginning of the process to find out what a young man like him is.
They got Lenore Sellers with worst PR at a appropriate rate. Lenore Sellers is all the things Lane described. He's big, he's athletically talented, he's physical, he's super gifted, he can throw the ball. He's awful at quarterback, just genuinely awful at quarterback, and there are people talking about him as a first-round pick based off tools. Talen Green has all those tools, and you got him in round six, and you're not hearing about the excuses. Arkansas had one other player drafted in the entire draft on offense. It was their running back. They had a couple guys I was interested on drafted free agents, but I think one of their linemen was also drafted, Fernando Carmona. But, like, Lenore Sellers, which isn't to dump on him, but everybody has made excuses for him in terms of why isn't he good? Well, the offensive line is bad and this, that, and the other, and all this other stuff. Talen Green didn't give any of those excuses. And, you know, they aren't attached to him like they would be if they made a bigger investment. But, like, I'm hoping that Talen Green is good enough so I don't have to hear about Lenore Sellers next year.
Oh, I couldn't agree with more with you. And Talen Green is a very responsible young man who takes responsibility, even though it's not his fault. He takes responsibility, and that's one of the first things you want to see a quarterback is somebody who displays leadership qualities and can throw a football. So the latter we're going to find out about.
Yeah, Lenore Sellers, the guy I watched last year because of all the buzz about him, and he made some plays in the game that I watched that were just unbelievable, you know, starting off the game. Great arm, fast, whatever. And I was convinced, oh, but there's your first round pick next year. And by the end of the game, I was unconvinced.
I was going to say, then you watch the second half, right?
Exactly. I watched the second half, and he's just not there. But interesting comparison, especially for a guy that we got in the sixth round. You know, very impressive. I have one other thing. We were talking about tight ends a little bit earlier. Oscar Dell got sniped from the Cleveland Browns. Do you believe, Lane, that if he didn't get sniped the pick before the Cleveland Browns selected, that would have been the guy?
Yes.
In a heartbeat.
Yep.
In a heartbeat. Like, with the moves that he made with Fano, made me more convinced they were going to like Oscar Dell because of how he blocks. He can do a lot of athletic concepts as a blocker. He's a willing blocker. And then his production is awful. But even if he never catches a ball, you have to cover him, and he's got speed to press vertical, and he was going to create space for Harold Fannin, if nothing else. Now, if he catches one of those balls where he's running down the deep part of the field and he forces safeties to cover him, great, he's off to the races. But as, like, to me, I looked at Oscar Delp as a responsible gamble, as, you know, relative to risk reward, as opposed to Kenyon Sadiq in round one. Both extraordinarily gifted athletes, but, like, in terms of risk reward, both could be absolutely awful at the next level and not do anything based on what they've done to this point, or they could both take off. And if you're asking me which one would I rather bet on, I'd rather bet the third round pick, in this case 73-74, as opposed to 16 to do that.
Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't. When they had interest in Sadiq, I sort of turned away from that because that wasn't really what I was hoping they'd go to, and come to find out that they weren't going that way either. So that was a good thing. As far as Oscar Delp's concerned, there was a lot of communication between the Browns, Todd Monken, and the staff at Georgia, and they really liked Delp. I don't have many reservations in saying that I believe that he would have been the pick there, especially with the need that they were expressing that they wanted to fill. So interestingly, it didn't work out that way, and they got the trade back, and they added another offensive lineman, and hope to go forward and see if these two tight ends they drafted later, who, if you put them together, may be able to do some of those things that Delp is capable of. But in the meantime, you got both of those guys also may be ahead of him in the receiving aspect at this stage of their careers coming into the NFL as well. So it's going to be interesting. But one more point on Taylen Green we were talking about. You know, this is a young, he bounced around a couple schools, and he always seemed to get better. Even though the talent that he was surrounded with, you could always question and wonder and throw flags up about. This was a young man who just progressively worked and got better at things. Even though it didn't always show statistically, or wins and losses, but watching what he did and how he worked the pocket, or how he moved and recognized defenses and receivers, you could see a progression with him. So that's what I'm, when the Browns looked at him and looked at him hard and decided to, hey, what, let's jump in and let's see what we can do with him. I'm sure that that had a lot to do with this thing, showing that he had, at least at that level, developmental qualities to see what would happen here at the next level.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the quarterback position, Lane. Since you weren't here last week, you missed Pete and I talking about the report that Deshaun Watson was ahead after a couple of days in shirts and shorts and all that sort of stuff. Do you put any stock in that at this point in the game, or do you think that Deshaun Watson is should be considered the leader in the clubhouse?
Well, let's put it simply and realistically in football terms. Deshaun Watson has played in the NFL for X amount of years. He has seen much more than any quarterback on the Cleveland Browns roster has. So when you get into these situations where they get the guys in there for the first time and they do these off-season things, and you start going through installs and things like that, your veteran guy who has produced on a high level in this league should excel.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt that in that room, he is the guy who is seeing and acknowledging things first. And you would expect that. That's how it should be. That doesn't mean a whole hell of a lot. What it means is when you get on the field, I mean, if you want to sit there in shorts and toss a football around, you know, you got Otto Graham and Dan Marino and everything else wrapped in one there. When the live bullets start, that's when the shit gets real. Yeah. This is when you find out, can Deshaun Watson move? Can Deshaun Watson get back in the pocket, slide in the pocket, not be distressed, and get rid of the ball? Is Deshaun Watson gun-shy? We don't know any of this. Any of the things that happen on a field when it matters most. So this report, whatever, whoever wants to call it that they put out here, which is just something to keep the narrative going about the quarterback situation. Yes, Deshaun Watson should have a leg up on these guys in this early session. That's it.
Having been there at the only practice that anyone was allowed to go to, if the Browns play air this year, air's in trouble. If the Browns play a team that has a defensive field, nothing I saw says this team is going to be good yet. And obviously that's without Jerry Jeudy. That's without the guys they just drafted. That's with a whole lot of guys. But the ball was going nowhere. They were competing underneath passes. And, you know, you got the stats, which don't include the ball that was dropped by Quincy Williams, but the Deshaun Watson threw any of that other crap. They weren't good. None of them were good. And, like, we'll see what happens and where this thing's going. But, like, if this is what you're banking on, you're going, well, this is why. And obviously, Todd Monken's not stupid. He understands that as well as anyway. They've been on the practice field 3 days. But if that's what you're basing it on, you're out of your mind. Like, this, you're basically setting the bar at absolutely the floor and saying this is good enough. And it's not. Like, they were just not good. Doesn't mean they won't get better, as I would freely say. It's day one. Like, the hope is that they are going to make dramatic improvements by the time we're looking at this team in July and August. But, like, based on day one, there's no quarterback on this team that's separating themselves from anything.
Yeah. And it, realistically, day one doesn't mean anything. You're just getting out there, and you're just starting to go through the motions. And everything is a thinking process. You're not reacting instinctively. If anything, you're reacting instinctively on what you're accustomed to doing and not what you're doing and what you've been learning, what's been rammed down your throat in film and in the room. It's going to take time. And anybody who thinks that they're going to jump out here in these first OTAs and even the very beginning of training camp, if you have some expectation that this team is just going to come out there and just move the football and the quarterback is going to be lightning, don't fool yourself, because this is a dramatic overhaul in what they're doing and everything is changing. Their complete structure and what everything that some of these young guys learned last year and the year before that is changed. It's a whole new learning curve, and you're not going to see positivity until you get into the later summer month when it starts to really matter. Right now, this is a crapshoot, a mixed bag, Monken finding out who can do what, who has what, who's going to do what. They give him some kind of idea. And yeah, he's starting at ground zero, because right now he has no expectation on any of these guys. They have an opportunity to walk in with a clean slate and show what they can do. And I mean, this is what you got. It is a newness to a system, and it's going to take time. So if they're going to look like garbage, they're going to look like a garbage early. It's just the way it's going to be. That's why you have the whole summer. You got a long training camp to get ready for the season.
Lane, are you convinced that the four quarterbacks that we have right now on this roster are going to be the same four quarterbacks when training camp opens?
I would say I really hope not, because I'd love to see some kind of veteran type, younger type presence if it was available that could actually play the position. Because I, right now, when I look at the Browns quarterback room, I just see a mixed bag of who in the hell knows what they are. You can't depend on Watson because of all the injuries. I mean, everybody wants to get excited and everything about Shedeur Sanders for some flash plays. Yes, it's better that now he's going to be in year two. It's going to be a different structure. There's going to be more talent. But the problem is that we got to find out, is he going to be the same guy? Dylan Gabriel is the guy who's everybody's written off. And he may be the guy that goes out there early in training camp and throws the shit out of the ball. You just don't know. So if there was a guy who would pop up that was available for the right place, Philadelphia, or somebody like that, that's what I would be interested in. If I couldn't find a player of such caliber, Jacoby Brissett, you know, those type of players, then you're going to end up dealing with the hand you're dealt. There's not much of a choice.
Certainly, Philadelphia has incentive to move Tanner McKee.
Yep.
My qualm, I guess, is if you're going to trade for him, he's got to be like up in the mix. Like, he can't be just another body thrown in here. Otherwise, I think it's counterproductive. And even if it's for like another fifth round pick, like you did with Kenny Pickett, I think I've got to like cut out multiple people in the process if you're doing that. Obviously, if you get Jacoby Brissett, the presumption is like he's either starting or damn near, which I'm all for. But like, unless you're saying Tanner McKee, we're basically ready to give you the keys, I don't really see the point. You're just adding one more guy to this whole mix, and he's played more football than these other guys, and he has some interesting tools. He's big. He can throw the ball around. There's some things to like about him, but like, I don't want to just go, hey, let's bring in yet another guy. Even if you're going, well, listen, we're also unloading Dylan Gabriel. Now we've got a different four quarterback. Todd Monken's already handicapping the reps, which is fine. That's certainly understandable. But like, if you're bringing in somebody, you've got to put them in a position to get those reps. Now, hopefully you just take Deshaun Watson's reps and you put them at zero. I can fix that real quick. But that would make sense to me, is if you're really bringing in somebody like Tanner McKee, which I'm fine with, to get reps and actually be a factor.
Those are the type of two guys that they need to be looking at. And it was the same thing as when they made that Kenny Pickett trade last year. They made that deal and they had him slotted in here as being near the top of the pecking order throughout a so-called competition to see what they could do. And if they make some kind of deal when we get into the summer here with Tanner McKee or Jacoby Brissett, which I'm not expecting, especially on the latter, those kind of guys, they come in here and there's a role, there's an expectation. There's not a guy that's going to be sitting there competing with four guys. So to make that kind of commitment means that they would be committing to that player, at least competing for that starting job, and not the facade of, you know, everybody's going to get some reps here. And when we talk about Deshaun Watson, it gets down to this. Todd Monken just needs to do his due diligence, and that's what he's doing. It's not that Deshaun Watson has been thrust into his face saying that you must play this guy, because that's not what it is. But he is going to do his due diligence, as he should. Especially a first-time head coach who has so many questions about his quarterback room. It's not going to hurt you to see if this guy has got any gas left. I mean, it won't take long to see if he does or doesn't. And if he doesn't, then the pecking order changes, because he just falls out. So you just have to get there, and you got to trust your head coach and that staff to at least get what they need to see out of him before you do anything else.
What's the strategy, though? I mean, is the strategy win games this year, or is the strategy let's get a franchise quarterback next year? You know, is the strategy to develop a quarterback, or just play for the playoffs this year? Because it strikes me, if you start Watson, that's a dead end, right? You know, you're not developing anyone. You're playing someone who may win you another game or two, but it's not someone you're going to invest in at the end of the year. And in fact, may put you in a worse position to actually pick that franchise quarterback, which I think we all know we need in order to pull this team together and make it, you know, really interesting in the years to come.
Let me ask you this question. You go into the training camp, you go in these summer months, you go in the training camp, you get to the end of camp, and Deshaun Watson is your best option. He looks better, performs better. He does everything he's supposed to, and he just outdistanced himself from these guys. What do you do? Do you start Deshaun Watson? Because this team isn't going into the season wanting to lose games. They want to win. They want to be competitive. And let the chips fall where they may. This isn't a situation where they're going, oh, let's just win four games and get a chance to draft a quarterback. Yeah, they'd love to be able to draft the quarterback and get their hands on him. But Jimmy Haslam's going to lose his freaking mind if they win four games. So you have to figure out what you're going to do. I don't sense in any way that this team is heading into this with the expectation of losing. Now, if that means that Deshaun Watson's your quarterback because he shows to be the best quarterback, then you play the best quarterback. That just tells you more about the other two guys. I'm taking Green out of the equation for now. That tells you more about the other two guys that were drafted last year that they're unable to rise to the occasion to beat out Deshaun Watson, who's been under the knife more than me.
I agree with you, especially about the latter part. That would be a indictment of what those other two are going to do. If Deshaun Watson is noticeably, and I mean noticeably, better, that's the only way I entertain it. And then I tenuously watch as Lucy holds the football down there. And I go up and hope she holds it the whole way through, but I will not be surprised when she pulls the football away.
I just like to emphasize what Pete said. My take has always been, if he's marginally better, stick with it. Try and see if you can develop one better player. But if he crushes the competition, and only if he crushes the competition in camp, do you want to go with Deshaun Watson? That's been my take.
I don't agree with that. I do not agree that he has to crush it to be the quarterback. Because you want a quarterback that's going to lead your team. Now, if he's obviously better and shows much more, then I'm fine with that for as long as it's going to be. I expect this competition to be much tighter than what people want to realize. And I think Shedeur Sanders is going to flourish with Todd Monken. I just think it's a matter of when, how quickly that's going to happen. And if he can get through to him to get the ball out, I think the opportunity is there for Shedeur Sanders to take the reins of this thing. I just think that heading into this situation, this opportunity where we're headed right now, Deshaun Watson, just because of the experience factor and that he's still vertical and moving, is the guy that's leading this thing. And there's a long way to go here. You got a whole summer. Then you got a long-ass training camp. A lot of things happen. So let's get there a little bit, and let's not be like everybody else who wants to sit here and beat the drum over these quarterbacks, where in the 1st of May, none of this means anything right now. It really doesn't. It doesn't mean anything.
I would argue that Deshaun Watson's best season as a Cleveland Brown was last year. There.
Yeah, I think you can make a strong case for that. You didn't have to think about him all year. But at any rate, yeah, you're right, Lane. We should be revisiting this, and I'm sure we will, you know, throughout this entire process, keep track of how these guys are doing. We're not going to keep stats on scoreboards and put it up on social media, but we're going to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be interesting to see what happens under a new head coach, offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, a different environment, a different system, just a different being within that entire organization and locker room. It's just a categorical change that you can't even imagine, because it's like a weight has been lifted off all these guys that are in this competition now. And not just Watson, I'm talking about Sanders and Gabriel too, because everybody's here with just a fresh slate to go out there and just show who they are. And try to wipe out what a year ago was in a lot of cases. And a lot of that was a lot of bad film. So it's going to be interesting to see how it develops. And that's why on May 1st, it don't mean very much. Now, let's get in the training camp when you start seeing some real reps happen and you start seeing live bullets. That's when these guys are going to start making their moves. And that's where it's going to be interesting to see that, you know, everybody's presumed starter today, where that all falls out when we get into the mix, when the shots are fired. I have a feeling things are going to be beginning to balance themselves.
If you're going to take stupid quarterback stats in training camp, I want yardage. I want yardage, because the tracker they had from the first practice, all the quarterbacks would have been under 50 yards passing. Like, would have been an absolute joke in terms of, like, they're trying to make this sound like these guys are doing well. They're throwing the ball 2 yards for most of these plays. Like, if they actually put yardage up there, people would scream at them to the point they'd never, ever do this again. And they should, because it's absolutely robbing anything of meaning or anything along those lines. So if you want to track accuracy stats, which are stupid, if the red zone is a different deal, you can do whatever you want. But in terms of middle of the field or back of your own 20 and all that stuff, I want yardage. They are not throwing the ball anywhere right at this point.
Well, we start talking about those trackers, and it's insanity, because you get excited about a quarterback throwing the ball up in the double coverage, where in a real game situation, the wide receiver at tight end is going to get laid out. But because you're not hitting people and you can make it complete it, it's those things are just horseshit. So let's just get down to it. Let's get these guys on the field and let's see what happens here, because all this other noise is irrelevant, and that's just people who just want eyes on their bullshit. And the only bullshit is the noise that comes out of there.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Let's talk a little bit about the wide receivers that we got. We got ourselves two new wide receivers in Casey Concepcion, Denzel Boston. ESPN's rookie rankings had Concepcion at number 6 and that Boston at number 8 among offensive rookie of the year candidates. They're different types of weapons. Concepcion more of a high volume yard after catch guy, at least in terms of what I've been reading. Boston is the big target who can help quarterbacks who, you know, may not throw the ball as precisely as you may wish. Let's go to you, Pete. Which of those rookie receivers do you think can impact the offense faster? Concepcion or Boston?
Oh, it's Concepcion without question. He's the only guy on this team that has the potential to be a number one receiver. To me, he makes Denzel Boston's pick so much more sensible. If you take Casey Concepcion out of the picture and you're just saying the Browns got just Denzel Boston, I think the expectations around Denzel Boston would be unrealistic in terms of what he's able to do. Never going to be a super high yardage guy, but he's a drive extender. He's a guy who scores points. I mean, the two of them combined scored something like 53 combined touchdowns in their college careers. Browns receivers the last year had 4. That is obviously going to be a big component. But Casey Concepcion, he is the toy. He is the thing that Todd Monken is going to obsess over ways to get him the football, because he's so good with the ball in his hands. He can create separation easily. He beat up on the best corners in football. Mansoor Delane, the kid from Notre Dame, everybody, like everybody you threw at him, yep. he got open, and like you watch him just run routes and stuff, and there are hundreds of yards and multiple touchdowns just left on the field because he doesn't have a quarterback who can get him the ball. Not only that, if they aren't giving him every opportunity to be the punt returner, they are insane. Just watch him against LSU. He almost returned three back for touchdowns. And one of them he did bring back for a touchdown, and he almost goes out of bounds, cuts all the way across the field, and he does this without, like, wasting motion. He's never the guy that's going to sort of do the whole reverse course and go backwards and do all that stuff that you sit there and yell no, 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 no at your TV screen. He's always trying to get positive yardage, but he has this mentality, which I really appreciate, of there's a way to score. I just have to find it, and he plays that way. He's physical. He was put in the backfield for NC State and was not afraid. It's not like he was a guy who, you know, just immediately went horizontal and tried to go around everybody. He went through contact. He takes aggressive angles in that and puts the opponent in a blender in terms of how they want to tackle him. If they miss, his acceleration is so good, he's immediately a threat to score. Anytime he touched the ball, he's an absolute threat, almost 200 pounds. Like the talk of like the comparison to, say, Flowers is really interesting because on a profile level, they are very similar. The difference is that Zay Flowers was 5'9", 182 pounds coming out of Boston College. Casey Concepcion is a hair under 6 foot and a hair under 200 pounds. He's just bigger and thicker to do all of those things. Like, I continue to be like, you know, going through all the draft thing, I'm like blown away that the Browns got it. I wrote about him way back a couple months ago. And at the time I postulated that I thought the Chiefs should be in play at 9. He was that good to me. And don't assume that the Browns could get him at 24. And then I was validated by the fact the Browns weren't sure they could get him at 24. He's that good. Are there risks with him with the hands and some of the stuff? Yeah, I don't really care, because the upside, the explosiveness is all that matters. And the people are sitting there going, well, he doesn't catch the ball every time. You know what he does? Scores touchdowns. You know what the Browns don't do? Score touchdowns.
Now, we can talk about the situation in the wide receiver room leading into the draft all we want. We know what it is, what it was, and what it wasn't. But when you get right down to it, we talked endlessly here about the Browns wanting a playmaking, explosive dynamic. And they were able to achieve that. And they're extremely happy with that because they rated him better than the 24th player on the board. They did. Now, the key is that they never anticipated the opportunity to select Denzel Boston. Never did they. We talked about quickness, explosiveness, playmaker, and we talked about size. And they just waltzed in to the other side of the spectrum with Denzel Boston. That's why they were excited. That's why they were willing to move up from 39 to get him, because they had him rated that good. A guy who could high point a ball, who can be physical, use his body, move the chains. It all fell into place for them. They hopefully on paper have resolved their wide receiver room issues for the most extent. Identifying the quarterback to utilize these skills and these tools is going to be critical from this team scoring 16 points a game and this team scoring 21 points a game. You know, that's a huge difference. But we're talking about they added guys, like Pete said, who just scored touchdowns. For a team that can't score, that's what they did. They went and found guys who just know what the end zone is. They're not afraid to cross that line and score. And they did it with dynamic type players, which is, it says a lot about their process, because on paper, they nailed it with their process. Now, getting them on the field and getting them with the quarterback and everything else is another story. But as far as what these two guys have shown on film, tape don't lie. If you dig into it and know what you're looking at, it doesn't lie. It can try to fool you a little bit, but if you know what you're looking for, it doesn't lie. And they found two guys who can play at this level. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Obviously, Harold Fandage should be really good because he was really good. There's no reason for him not to be really good. I can't wait for Jerry Jeudy to play with these two guys.
Yep.
Because Jerry Jeudy is going to be greatly enhanced by the presence of Casey Concepcion. These are both guys who can get open and run routes. And as a defense, now you have to decide how you're going to cover these two. And Todd Monken, my assumption is going to be he's going to just jumble up those four guys and throw them out in the field in any number of different combinations and say, try and figure it out. And then he's going to motion them and do a whole bunch of other stuff to create problems. So he could have Casey Concepcion do a whole bunch of stuff, and then all of a sudden Jerry Judy's behind you scoring a touchdown. Like, I know so many people are down on Jerry Judy, and Todd Monken has already declared, among other things, he's talking some shit this offseason already, despite the fact he hasn't done anything yet. Talking about getting Jerry Judy back to 2024, I'm here for it. I don't disbelieve him either. I think that's in there so long as the quarterback plays there, which was the big missing piece. I think Jerry Judy is going to bounce back in a big way, and it's just these guys are all going to make each other better.
You can talk to some of these guys. I've talked to a few of them. And he said one of the early things that's going on within that locker room, within this organization and staff, is that the environment has changed. There is a different feel to it. It's more competitive, and there's a lot more rhetoric. There's a lot more discussion. There's a lot more talking with people, with players, coaching. It's just going to be a fundamental change to see how that transpires. Because a guy like Jerry Judy, he tends to waver off a little bit when he doesn't have that right voice or that right support and things like that. And I have no doubt in my mind that played into the equation of a season ago. And it's going to be interesting when we talk about the two rookies, you talk about Jerry Judy, you talk about Isaiah Bond. You know, suddenly you went from a room that didn't run that well and didn't have any size to a room that's got speed, quickness, agility, size, can high point a ball, and the dynamic has vastly changed. Now, the only thing that has to change with that is getting the ball out of the quarterback's hands and into theirs, because there's no doubt that your head coach and OC, who's going to call plays, is that they know how to coach football. They know how to play with quarterbacks, know how to scheme people open. And we're talking about guys who aren't going to need a lot of wiggle room to get open. They find ways to get open.
All right, let's set up a couple of questions before we shut down for the hour. Jeffrey Champion has a question for you, Pete. Wants to know your thoughts on Aaron Anderson, who we brought in as an undrafted free agent. You have a strong take on Aaron?
He's undersized, but look, as a sophomore, he led LSU in receiving in Garrett Nussmeier's good year. Say what you will, we're not talking about FAMU. Like, it's LSU. He led a time college program receiving. Now, the problem for Aaron Anderson, he's got a really difficult Jeff chart to make all of a sudden because that room has gotten really good. I like him with the ball in his hands. I think he's slippery as a player. He is, I would say, similar to Gage Larvidane, except he's got a much better resume. So we'll see if that really translates to much. Again, it's going to be really difficult for that guy to make the roster. It's going to be difficult for a couple of guys who made the roster last year to make the roster.
Interesting guy who found ways to help move the change at LSU against some of the better defenses and playing against talent. And interesting guy. It's going to be interesting to see how he does when we get into camp here. It's just that now we're looking at a wide receiver room that you can say there's some depth and there's going to be a lot of competition in those last couple spots.
All right. That's encouraging to hear. Lane, let me point this one at you. Kelly Black wants to know, would the Browns have any interest in Kayvon Thibodeau if he was traded?
Well, I'm not sure what you could do on that front because they're not going to extend draft capital away. Then you have to pay him. What do you – is this relating to a Myles Garrett type thing? They're not trading Myles Garrett for the foreseeable future. They got Alex Reid on the other side. It just comes down to dollars and cents, and this is a guy who's going to command a lot, could command compensation. I just don't see where the Browns get into that mix.
Well, it's priced to acquire him. If he was priced to move, he'd already be gone. And then he's going to be on the fifth-year option as a fifth overall pick. That is not a small chunk of change. And the Browns don't really have that to throw it. Like, if he was to be released and somehow pass through waivers and you could sign him as something – yeah, he's a really interesting pure pass rushing prospect, but he's not going to deliver for the price you're going to pay him in the way you need him to, and he's certainly not going to help anything in terms of replacing Myles Garrett. That's just delusional.
Fair enough. yesterday there was a show on, I think it was ESPN. I didn't watch it. I heard about it. Pete, I think you may have watched it. Von Gene wants to know your take on The Pick Is In, which featured the Browns draft room as one of the three that they looked at, and then rejecting a trade offer, a kind of ridiculous trade offer from the Dallas Cowboys.
I mean, it was a fun sort of look behind the curtain. They didn't really give you a whole lot other than, you know, the turning down the trade from Dallas, which was a ridiculously low ball offer, which Andrew Berry basically pointed out that fact. It was a low ball offer to go from 9 and 24 to 12 and 20, and getting a fifth was a joke. The only thing that was really interesting, obviously a lot of people sort of looked at the Browns room and look how orderly, look how logical this room operates compared to the Dallas Cowboys, which felt more like a free-for-all. Frankly, I think the Dallas Cowboys are pretty typical of a lot of teams. I just think the Browns are a little bit more organized than a lot in this particular element. But the most interesting part to me was the three players that the Browns were allegedly interested in. According to them, they were looking at Jordan Tyson, Spencer Fano, and Francis Maui-Noah. And obviously, look, Jordan Tyson's an incredibly talented player. The injury history scares the crap out of me. I'm glad they did not do that. I'm glad the Saints jumped on that one. But I am genuinely curious to know what the Browns' vision for a Francis Maui-Noah was with this team. I assume it would have been tackle until he fails into guard, but there's a world where they just said, screw it, we're going to put him at right guard and just have him just maul people, and that would have been, made more sense to me. But obviously, I'm thrilled with the fact that they got the guy I wanted out of those three the most, which is Fano.
All right. Well, I tell you what, we are going to wrap it up at this point. We had some great questions, some great comments from the chat room. Thank you, guys. Really been a pleasure over the course of this last hour. It's fun, as always, and I learned a lot. So thank you for in the chat room. Please like and subscribe on your way out. Real easy to do, and it helps the broadcast. And Lane, Pete, of course, thank you for your time and your insight over the course of the last hour. We will be back next week after being able to witness the rookie minicamp and maybe judge for ourselves a little bit more on some of these players. And we'll be here to unload all of that next week on Gang of Three. Good night, everybody. We'll see you soon.